This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. 50 years ago, President Lyndon Johnson declared war on poverty. He put a spotlight on rural poverty, particularly in the mountains of Appalachia. Iconic images of the period included children without shoes and rundown shacks. The photographs featured in Time magazine painted a bleak picture of the Appalachian region and its people. And for some reason, those visual representations became symbols for the entire area, and they endured. But 5 decades later, North Carolina photographer Roger May set out to gather images that counter the stereotypes of the region. His work, Looking at Appalachia, is a crowdsourced photography project that offers a more diverse perspective on the region, and he joins me now. Roger, welcome. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here, Frank. Thanks.
Also with us is Joy Saliers. She is executive director of the North Carolina Folklife Institute and serves as the advisory board for Looking, or serves on that board, I should say. You're not the whole board, but you're on it, and the project is called Looking at Appalachia. Joy, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Tom Rankin's here, director of the MFA program in Experimental and Documentary Arts at Duke University. Welcome back, Tom.
Good to be here, Frank.
Roger, you are from the Appalachian region. Tell us why you started this project.
Well, initially I wanted to do this project as a sole photography project, just because I spend a lot of time looking at photographs of Appalachia, and I see this recurring theme of poverty and all those that exists, to be sure, in Appalachia. It's certainly not all that Appalachia is. And so I wanted to photograph the entire region and realized pretty quickly that was a big undertaking.
Had you encountered people not from Appalachia whose sole idea about the place was created by those photos?
I'm sure I have. Nothing memorable. I don't remember specific instances of that, but I'm sure that a lot of folks, and even my own understanding of the region, was somewhat limited into what I'd experienced personally and seen in photographs.
How did you define Appalachia for this project?
I very simply used the Appalachian Regional Commission's map, boundary map, for this project, and it encompasses 13 states, parts of 13 states, and a total of 420 counties.
You said it started out as kind of a personal project, but it grew pretty quickly. Tell us how it evolved.
It did. I was actually on a weekend away with my wife and was not really supposed to be working, and sent out this note on Instagram that I'm thinking about doing this project, and I wanted to crowdsource it. And then overnight, it sort of spun quickly out of control in a good way. And mm-hmm. I quickly realized that I was going to need help with this project. So with folks like Joy, I developed an advisory board and an editorial board to help me sort of wade through the images that started to stream in.
Well, Joy, you're from the area as well. How do you think, from your point of view, how has that area, that region, been portrayed?
Well, yes, my family's from Appalachia, eastern Kentucky and eastern Tennessee on both sides. So I have a very personal connection to the subject and to the project. And I think the photos based on the war on poverty are just one example of many ways that Appalachia gets shown in our media. You can look at the Beverly Hillbillies. You can go on and on about those stereotypes. So I think it's really it comes from more than one place, but it really becomes, to me, a flattened, kind of reductive view of a region where it's just about poverty rather than being kind of a nuanced story of a place.
Right, and the problem in reporting, of course, is once you get it in your head that that's what that region represents, and then you want to do the story on poverty, you go to Appalachia and you look for precisely the images that fit the picture that you've already written.
Well, and I think, it's understandable that when you look at the broken down car in the ditch with the snow on it, that's an appealing picture because it has pathos and it's evocative. But if that's the only place you're training your camera, then what are you not pointing your camera at?
And we have examples of that. I mean, in 1965, Charles Carroll, our own Charles Carroll, North Carolina, WUNC alum, who is, I think, famous for his sensitivity to this kind of thing. I mean, here's a piece that he did called Christmas in Appalachia in 1965.
Up on the hill is the Pert Creek School. And up there, on this one day, is the only sign anywhere in this hollow that it is Christmas in Appalachia.
Silent night, holy night, shepherd.
This is the only Christmas carol many of Virgie Sumter's pupils will hear this year, the one they sing themselves in their one-room schoolhouse on the day of the Christmas program. It falls the job of one of the older boys to keep coal on the stove at the Pert Creek School, just as it is the older girls who fetch the drinking water from the spring. Mrs. Sumter is busy enough teaching seven grades in this one room and trying to keep the schoolhouse clean. She also cooks the hot lunch at noontime. The food comes from the government. Some of the children can afford the 20 cents a day they're supposed to pay for lunch, and charities in the region pay for the others. But the charities themselves are so poor that they often raise money for the hot lunches by selling bootleg liquor.
There you go, Charles Corral, 1965. Not inaccurate, but Joy, tell me what you hear.
Well, all of us are sitting here rolling our eyes. The idea that mountain folks don't have Christmas traditions and rich musical traditions and wonderful food and all of the things that we think of that make a community special and, you know, persistent, it's just obviously ludicrous.
Tom, why do you think those stereotypes persisted?
Well, in part, I mean, you said it there that Corral, I mean, maybe all those things were true about that particular place in that particular moment, but that program ends up standing as a symbol for a whole region, and therefore people begin to think, well, that's the way everybody is. So why do they persist so? I think that because it's at least two things. One is that there has been great poverty in Appalachia from extractive industry and from all kinds of exploitation, and then the media focus has been on that, and so you get this resonance and over and over and over again. And as I think Joy just suggested, people go and see what they've already seen. They look for what they already know, and it's the widening of the lens, the widening of the frame, the broadening of the view that Rogers' project is all about, and also the broadening of the region. I mean, Eastern Kentucky is one piece of Appalachia. East Tennessee is another piece. Western North Carolina is yet another piece. And within all of that, there's an amazing diversity. And so this, you know, a crowdsourced but curated project like this really embraces that kind of diversity of view and diversity of content and the way in which, yes, some people are poor and some people are not, and some people can sing and some people can't.
Well, Roger, I wonder what happened to you. I mean, you went into this with kind of a mission. It was going to be a solo project. And then, you know, the big wide world starts informing you. How did your ideas change?
Well, that's been one of the most fun things about this project is I'm sort of relearning Appalachia as a region. And it's been a tremendous opportunity to see parts of Appalachia that I'm not familiar with and to learn things about the region that I never knew before. And I never cease to be amazed at the quality of the photographs that are submitted. And my favorite ones are emails that begin with, "I'm not a professional photographer, but ... And those sometimes are the most wonderful, wonderful images.
We've got some of those images at our website, stateofthings.org. Maybe you can talk about a few of your favorites.
Well, the cover image right now is a great photograph from the Panhandle of West Virginia, and it's a summertime photograph of these kids that are just out. Look, they may have been at a pool party or something, and they're kicking these inflatable balls around, and it's just such a dreamlike quality in this picture. And I could speak at length about any of those photographs.
Well, it's interesting because some of them do have what I would consider artistic qualities. There's some magical kind of translucence and sort of sunshine going through a giant, a giant kickball or, you know, sort of a woman at the top of a mountain and a kind of halo. I mean, there are some photographs that appear to me to be artistic, and others are kind of family photos, but again, in many ways, express the diversity of a region because there are so many different families in so many different contexts.
Absolutely. And that's one of the beautiful things about photography is that it is limiting in some ways, but in other ways it's a language that we all speak.
Talk about, Tom, I'm going to put this question to you because, you know, you were at the Center for Documentary Studies for a long time, and now you're doing the MFA in Experimental Arts at Duke. But the idea of curating this, I mean, it's, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff on Facebook, and I've seen a lot of stuff on Instagram, and it reminds me that there is a profession of photography, and it's very different from the stuff we think is interesting, right?
Right.
So curating a project like this has to be a pretty big project.
Yeah, I think it is. Sure. And I was listening to Roger talk just now. One of the reasons this is happening is because he's interested both in making pictures, but also in seeing other people's pictures. Mm-hmm. And then he's assembled an editorial board and to do that curatorial work, not as gatekeeping, which, you know, not as sort of you're in and you're out, you know, we've got our standards and I'm sorry you're not, but as a way of getting to some of these issues of diversity, making sure that somebody who is not, quote, a professional photographer has a chance for their work to be seen. And I think that's one of the great successes when you scroll through looking at Appalachia, that you see not only a diversity of place, but a diversity of way of picturing place. A photograph is as much, you know, about its content as its style, but here you see both. And you can, I think that the web is great in that everybody can be a photographer, everybody has a microphone to use. But at some point, somebody has to bring a point of view to it, and that's what this curatorial process, I think, does.
But it is an interesting thing, Joy, because the problem with stereotyping happened in large part because outsiders came in, perhaps with a preconceived notion, and then went and documented what they'd already thought. But there's also the problem of the insider not seeing what's interesting about their place. I mean, what's interesting to you may not be fundamentally characteristic at all. I mean, it does seem to me that for the curators, it's a challenge as well.
Well, that's one thing I love a lot about this project is by opening it up to lots of different photographers, you can have both. You know, it's just as you said, it's not that an outside eye can't sometimes bring a new perspective. But just the very fact of seeing all of those different photographers represented speaks to the diversity of the region without even having to say that, which I love. And also the way that Rogers structured the project has created this widening of that kind of authority and gatekeeping presence, too, so that it's not one person. And that, to me, a lot of times is the problem with the outsider coming in, is that the meaning gets made by one person rather than it being kind of more communal, and that's really what this project does.
So the frame itself, the fact that you create a context, Roger, is something against which the photograph can be seen. So what might be to me just a subjective little shot of our birthday party put in this larger context of this is the diversity of a region, and even a deeper context as it plays against the stereotype of the region, gives the photograph more meaning in some ways.
Sure. Absolutely.
And the whole project. Have you been surprised at the response to this?
Absolutely. Surprised is probably an understatement, but it's been really great to see it take off and to have so many people involved. And, you know, this project has become so much bigger than any one person or one idea, and it's just really amazing to watch it.
Like over 2,000 submissions?
Yeah, in 2014 alone, we had over 2,000 submissions, and we curated that down to just shy of 300 pictures. And so we're now in the final push of culling those down to about 75 photographs that we will have printed and framed, and will be a traveling exhibition that will start in Spartanburg, South Carolina in May of this year.
And Tom, I guess this speaks to the way in which we can now use the web and sort of multimedia to reflect the very particularity of a region in all of its diversity and then share it more generally.
Exactly. And I think also using the web, you know, one of the things that outside points of view often were derived from is pretty quick visits. You know, mm-hmm. You're in and out. And we talk in documentary about the difference between that and the long view. And so while Roger can't be in all these states for a long time, the project can be. And the people that are photographing are often. And so we get the long view. And that's so much more, it's drilling deeper and rather than being, you know, a half inch deep and 1,000 miles wide, it's in some of these communities really tapping deep.
You know, it does raise sort of an even larger question, though, that once you show us all this diversity and we become amazed by it, then does Appalachia mean anything anymore?
Well, now there's a Yes, I think it does. I think it means something different, though. I think he, by taking the Appalachian Regional Commission map, first of all, it runs from, you know, parts of Mississippi to to New York. That surprises some people that are listening right now. And it's a government map. And if this had been in a university, that we'd still be debating whether that was the right map. Roger just went ahead with it.
Mm.
There's a lesson as well. Yes, I think Appalachia does mean something, and I think this kind of project evolves its meaning and will continue to evolve its meaning.
Well, I just have to say I'm part of a Facebook group for Appalachian Americans, and someone posted the other day a question about whether it's pinto beans or soup beans or something else, and there were 352 comments. And I think those of us who have roots in Appalachia would say, you know, we can absolutely talk about what some of our maybe commonalities are, what defines us, but we would argue that it's a much broader set of things than what has sometimes
been portrayed. Therefore, no beans.
We're going to do we're going to do a whole show on that, you can bet. But for now, thank you very much for this project. We've got pictures on the web as well as that map of the Appalachian region, so you can be surprised for yourself that it goes from New York to Mississippi. And I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Photographer Roger May directs the project looking at Appalachia. Joy Saliers is the executive director of the North Carolina Folklife Institute, serves on the advisory board. Tom Rankin directs the MFA program in experimental and documentary arts at Duke. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you for listening. As I say, go to the web. You can see the pictures. You can see the map. Stateofthings.org is the place to go. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is the technical director. Jess Clark is the intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.